Bukowski here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, coming to you loud and clear from the Sweet James Studios, located in an undisclosed location, deep behind the orange curtain. 800-222-5222 is the number if you'd like to be on the program. Sam@samnation.com is the email. I do check that during the show. Big news today out of Mexico City. 7.1 magnitude quake, and as of right now, 7 o'clock in the evening, looks like about 130 to 140 people confirmed dead. This is a massive tragedy. Now, I know Mexico City well, and I'll tell you, but with a big problem, besides the fact that you have a very crowded, very populated city located on a major fault line, is that this is a city built entirely or mostly on clay. You go to Mexico City, if you've walked around in the old town, a lot of the buildings before the earthquake hit, a lot of these buildings are leaning. In fact, there's a very famous Bellas Artes, performing arts center and art museum, and across the way is a Sears and Roebuck. Now, they're going out of style here, but they're still popular in Mexico. So there's a Sears, and the building that Sears is in right next to it, when it's leaning so far over that there's a gap. You can see the two buildings side by side. So my point here is, that's the problem. And it's why you're seeing so many of these buildings collapsing. And it's not something that they figured out recently. You know, I remember one time going there and walking through the cathedral, and the cathedral obviously is very old. There's an elevation difference of several feet going, from the entrance all the way up to the altar in the back, several feet. So I asked, what kind of settlings occurred. Even in the 1950s, they were sinking at a rate of 26 centimeters, which is about, 15 or so inches a year, each year. It's huge. And so, we're humans, right? We're stubborn. We continue to build and live in areas that are dangerous. So they're on a fault line. They're sinking. Everybody knows about it and has known about it for quite some time. And this is the result. By the way, we're not immune to this ourselves. Look at San Francisco. I think, the entire financial district where all the bougie, very expensive skyscrapers are. That's landfill, guys. I mean, that's all built. That's all reclaimed land from the ocean. You know that because it's flat. So the place to be in San Francisco is Nob Hill, not in the financial district when earthquake hits. And then we have the same thing going on now with hurricanes. We people building their homes in flood plains. So anyway. Heart and thoughts go out to people in Mexico City and hopefully to a quick recovery there. Now, we have had our own political earthquake here at home. And it's not even the UN speech, because today was a bad day. If you were a mainstream media type ready to write the political obituary of Donald Trump, today was a terrible day. Because, well, look, first of all, CNN had to admit that Trump was, in fact, wiretapped. And it comes in the form of Paul Manafort, Trump's previous one-time campaign chairman. The revelation coming that he was, in fact, surveilled by the Obama administration. The Obama administration got the FISA warrant and had tapped his phone line the exact way that it was described by Trump in that now infamous tweet. Oh, but Sam, that's Paul Manafort. That's not Trump. But wait a minute. Where did Paul Manafort live at the time of this surveillance? Well, that's the real answer. That's a real stunner here. He had an apartment in Trump Tower. So you see all the pieces now coming together, and you observe these mainstream media types trying to just scramble to get themselves out of this mess. Because we've heard for months and months how just Trump is a stupid buffoon. But listen, The real issue, the thing that's going on here with Manafort, is you've got people crowing about the fact that he is going to turn, and that Mueller and the investigation, that they're hot on Trump's tail, and that it's the Cold War is heating up. I saw that headline somewhere today. And I think this is a very interesting part of the story, because you've got to understand how these things work in the real world, in the world of law. Because, look, if they had enough to charge Manafort, they would have charged him already. That's the real story. You heard about the no-knock raid. They picked Manafort's lock while he and his family were asleep in their Alexandria, Virginia apartment building. So the guy's in bed. Mueller sends in a team, presumably an FBI investigation hit squad. And they do a pre-dawn no-knock raid. They pick his lock. They go in. They take everything of interest. They go through files, hard drives, the whole kit and caboodle. So now I am supposed to believe, if I'm listening to the news and I'm buying all of it 100%, I'm supposed to believe that Trump's toast, that they're putting pressure on Manafort and Manafort's going to turn. Do you know how prosecutors in the real world of law put pressure on people? They arrest them. That's what they do. The legal standard, this is just a little bit of legal inside baseball for you. The standard for an arrest is lower than for a conviction. If you want to convict somebody in a court of law and you want to get the big guilty, you've got, what's the standard? You hear about this all the time on Law and Order and those type of shows, right? You've got the burden of proof to do what? Beyond a reasonable doubt, exactly. But for an arrest, you just need probable cause. It's a very, very, very low standard. So my point is that if they found anything that had a whiff of impropriety, anything that showed any kind of collusion, anything that tied Manafort to Russia, or anything, by the way, illegal that was unrelated to the investigation, right? They could have come in for one purpose and found evidence of, I'm just throwing this out there, I'm not saying this is it, but tax fraud. It's a very common one. They go through and they go, aha, here, we see some receipts, some income that he didn't report back in 2015. Gotcha. But they would arrest him. They'd put him in jail. They'd book him. There's nothing puts pressure on somebody in a case like throwing him in handcuffs and putting him in jail. And by the way, if you're Mueller, who's the target of the investigation? Because everybody's like, oh, the target, Manafort is the target of the... No! Nonsense. Baloney. Trump is the target, of course. I mean, he's the grand prize. If you're Mueller, who are you going after? If you arrest and convict Manafort, who was Trump's campaign manager for what, a hot minute? What do you have? Nothing. You got nothing. I mean, that's a door prize. So I'm observing all of this, and I'm reading in between the lines. I've got to tell you, I don't think there's a lot of there. I think that while the left is gleeful online and in front of the cameras and on the radio, gleeful that the heat is turning up on Trump, I don't see it. Because if the heat were turning on, they would have Manafort in cuffs. And they would be talking to him about making a deal. All right, you see, you got a taste of jail there, Paul. Not good. If you tell us what you know, we can cut a deal. We can give you immunity. And that's when you get people to break down. So just as this thing unfolds, look for that. And until that happens, everything you're hearing about the heat being on and imminent, imminent Trump implication. I mean, it's not there. I'll tell you what is there, though, as far as investigations go. I think there's a number of high-profile Obama administration officials who have testified now about this wiretapping business. And these are all smart people, including James Comey. They're all smart people, and they all deep down loathe the Trumpster. And all of them are making the same mistake that I've talked about. I've called it Trump derangement syndrome, where normally very intelligent, capable, people do stupid things because they are so besides themselves over Trump and what Trump stands for and the way he is. All right. Some of the things I like, but other people don't. And so with this Trump derangement syndrome, these very intelligent, smart, capable people are doing stupid things like lying under oath. And now with CNN, who I last check is no friend of Donald Trump, is having to admit that, yeah, there was a bug. There was a surveillance, electronic surveillance, phone surveillance of Paul Manafort. Yes, it happened. It happened when he was in Trump Tower. That's a problem. Oh, it looks like all these things that were alleged probably could have, maybe could have happened. And oh, let's sweep it under the rug over here. Like, just put it over off to the side. While that happened, let's just refresh our memory on what James Comey said when he testified under oath to the House Intelligence Committee back in March.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
You know, this is where because I've done a lot of depositions and I've taken people's depositions and I've worked hard to trick them up and to get them to lie. That's what you do as an attorney. You want your opponent, your target, to get caught up in a web of lies. You want to discredit him. It's the entire purpose of getting people to testify, whether it's in Congress or it's on the stand in a trial or in a deposition. And so I'm looking at this, and I'll tell you, this language is not your standard, very specific, oddly specific language. He's generally saying, I have no information about this whatsoever. And I will tell you this, if this FISA warrant went down, he was aware of it. 100%. So what you have right now, if what CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times are reporting is true, you know who is actually sitting with their money in a vice right now? You know who's actually facing a potential of a criminal indictment, of a felony count, of lying under oath, perjury? James Comey. And this is something that I have said all along is these guys, all of these anti-Trumpists, all of these deep state operatives are so wrapped up in their emotional dislike and hate for Trump that I think that they've made mistakes. They've made serious errors. And now all that's left to be had and seen is will Jeff Sessions and this Justice Department under Trump have the huevos to go after them, to try them, to charge them? I hope so, because you know what? This is what these guys think, that they're above the law. They think that they are the adults in the room and have been talking down to Donald Trump from day number one. And I personally think it's shameful and it's disgusting. Because they're telling us over and over again, piously, how the president is not above the law and da-da-da. But you know what? Meanwhile, they think they are. And they're acting as if they are. Because time and time again, they have gotten away with this BS, and now they are not. It's catching up to them. And do you know why in part it is? Trump derangement syndrome. You know who's the one fanning the flames behind the scenes? This is very important. This is the method to the madness of Donald Trump. And I've tried to explain this from the beginning, and everybody just always says, Sam, well, he's just a crazy guy. He's insane. What was it? Keith Olbermann's been on Twitter today. Somebody needs to take and put him in a padded cell. Olbermann, you know, Trump's insane. Sorry, world. You know, we're so sorry. Trump's insane. Trump's insane. You know what? Maybe he's not insane. Maybe he directly and knowingly baits people into doing stupid crap that gets them in trouble and explodes in their faces. Maybe, just maybe, this is all part of a deliberate tactic to mess with you guys. So stop underestimating him. That, I think, is the most dangerous thing the left is doing right now. All right, the UN speech. I will talk about it. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live, back after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. The media is declaring that Trump's speech is a declaration of war. Well, it kind of was. I mean, the fact that it was unprecedented that you had a president the president of the United States coming to the UN and speaking at the podium about the obliteration and the destruction of another country has everyone in a tizzy. But, you know, I watched the speech and I thought it was fantastic. I was fist pumping. Yeah, that's right. Because you know why? For years, I have been listening to ninnies up there. Oh, yes, Bush. I mean, what did you have up there? You had, the axis of evil. And then don't even remind me about the 8 years of Obama. I mean, that was just blah, 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 blah. Nothing. Zero. Another red line, another admonition, another don't you dare cross this line. And a call to our allies to help and coordinate and talk to and diplomacy our way into what? Into a mess. Because everybody right now is talking about the speech as if it occurred in a total factual vacuum. As if today was the first day, well, maybe yesterday or last week, that North Korea ever became a serious problem on the radar. I mean, that's nonsense. Haven't we been dealing with this nut job hermit kingdom for the better part of 30 years, 40 years? I mean, this is insanity. We went to war with these clowns. It's called the Korean War. I don't know if they've been our enemies for a long time. And we have technically been in a state of war, by the way. It was an armistice. It was technically a state of war with them ever since. But this nuclear crisis has been festering for years, and they've been building these rockets and they've been making these tests. And what have we done over and over again? Diplomacy, talking, you know, some basic, you know, sanctions. So everybody's criticizing Trump as if this was how could this be the first step? Well, what are we supposed to do? Start at the beginning with all this negotiating? So here is the line that everybody, or the section of the speech that everybody's talking about. And let's just play it, because I it's good to hear it as a refresher. And then let me give you my thoughts.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for. Let's see how they do.
Yeah, I don't like comparing Trump to anybody else. I think, you know, for most leaders and most people, they are their own person. But the only thing I could think of that was comparable, this is Churchillian. This is Reagan-esque. It's powerful. Look, we're enough. This is done. You are done. If you continue with this bellicose rocket firing nonsense that you've been engaged in, we will level you to the ground. And this isn't, by the way, the kind of neocon war or the kind of leftist war that we're used to fighting. This is the key signal sent in the speech is we no longer are the country that we're not going to be worried about your hospitals or your orphanages or your schools. We will fight a real war. And this is coming. This isn't just Trump. Trump didn't just sit down and doodle this speech on a napkin on his way to the UN aboard Marine One. If you think that, you're nuts. This was a speech that he drafted with his Secretary of Defense, with his Secretary of State, with Nikki Haley. A lot of thought went into the speech. So trust me, it's substantive. And I'm going to give you more of my thoughts. There's a lot here. So I want to give it the right amount of time. All right, we got John Wolf up next with the news. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Bottom of the hour, we're back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC, coming to you from the Sweet James Studios. 1-800-222-5222 is the number, and sam@samnation.com is the email. Giving you some reactions to the Trump speech at the United Nations. No. The diplomats and national leaders are not accustomed to being spoken to this way by a U.S. president. And no, I don't think that's a problem in the sense that it's about damn time. The United Nations to me represents this country club for a bunch of tin horn dictators to come, subsidized, of course, by us, you and I, taxpayers here in the United States, because, you know, who funds the UN budget? That's right. Uncle Sam. Last I know, Uncle Sam gets his moolah from reaching into my back pocket. So, yeah, so we're funding this. Meanwhile, all these, you know, little countries who are all, you know, most of them, many of them, dictatorships, oppressive regimes, you've got countries that have some of the most horrific human rights abuses, chairing human rights committees. Sudan, for example, Genocide Central on the Human Rights Council. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the United Nations. So pardon me if I receive the news or the criticisms from so many people in the press that Trump diminished this noble chamber, et cetera, et cetera. If I meet that statement with a little bit of a raised eyebrow, I wish you could see it, because I am giving producer Robbie a raised eyebrow. Probably look like a stroke victim. Anyway. So here is just a potpourri of reactions on CNN today to this speech.
Look, this wasn't a speech. This was a sermon. And he wasn't a president. He was a preacher up there, given his dark worldview.
Well, Wolf, I thought that was one of many examples of how intellectually confused, if not outright incoherent, this speech was.
This was a very somber, dark speech, if you will. Wolf.
It was remarkable to see a leader of any country, but the president of the United States standing in the well of the United Nations General Assembly, threatening to totally destroy a country.
Audible gasps, I'm told, extremely unusual, an emotional reaction, as this diplomat said.
It's really frightening to hear an American president talk about obliterating any other country.
They're all getting the vapors. And I love it. You know, actually, even I'll tell you, the best part is, what do they What do they think the alternative is to do here? I found a piece here in the Telegraph from looks like April of 2016. That's the title of the piece. We could destroy you, Obama warns erratic North Korean leader. So in that sense, what Trump is saying maybe isn't even that unprecedented. I mean, when Obama said it, I presume everything was fine. Is the difference that he didn't say it at the UN? You're not supposed to go to the UN and say this? I mean, I'm trying to follow the rules or the logic. But the most important question to ask anybody that comes at you saying, well, why not give diplomacy a chance? Anyone who comes at you with that, say, look, this problem with a belligerent, a threatening, and a nuclear ambitious power in North Korea, this problem has been going on for a long time. And diplomacy has been tried, and there is a window right now that is closing because their capabilities, believe it or not, these crackpot dummies have managed to put together some pretty impressive equipment, and they're firing missiles over Japan. So they're, you know, you marry the, you put the nuclear technology, the nuclear capability with the ballistic missile program, you got a problem, and you've got a window and time in which to solve it. So I am very glad Trump is in. And by the way, I wonder what Hillary would have done. See, because that's the other alternative. Hillary could have been president. So what would Hillary have done? Well, thank goodness I have a clip of her today talking about what she would do. So don't go anywhere. I'll play it for you up next. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Hi, Sam Rojofsky here. What do you do when you get into a car accident? Very important. You don't want to deal with the other side directly. You do not want to say anything to them because whatever you tell them can be used against you. It's like the admonition. It's like getting arrested. Not really. But, you know, the other side wants to win, and their win is your loss. Remember that. So it doesn't matter. You could be the most credible person and have everything, you know, all the truth on your side. You're never going to convince somebody that doesn't want to give you money how good and how deserving you really are. And that's how insurance companies work. So don't be fooled by all of their cute ads. Even if it's your own insurance company, right? If it's an uninsured motorist claim and you've got to get money from them. No, don't talk to them. Call attorney Sweet James Bergner first. Sweet James, he is the lawyer that we trust here on the program to get it done, all right? To take the fight to the insurance company and get the recovery that you deserve, okay? Car accidents, truck accidents, motorcycle accidents, slip and fall, dog bite cases, headless Uber cars driving around, smashing into things. I don't even know. Any type of injury, give Sweet James a call. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. That's his phone number. Now I'm going to give you his website, sweetjames.com. That's it, sweetjames.com. Go to it, check it out, look at his picture. You'll like his smile. I think you really will. So you've heard me talk about him, but keep Sweet James in your hip pocket just in case. All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back here and talking about Trump's dark and divisive speech delivered at the UN. Now, Bolton, you know, John Bolton, who was a former ambassador to the United Nations and somebody who I think should have been Secretary of State instead of Tillerson. I think Bolton was the only decent, you know, really bad money guy to come out of the Bush administration, in my opinion. Anyway. Bolton thought it was great. He said that. He gave it high marks. Said it was the best speech ever delivered at the UN. Said it was the best speech that Trump had ever given. I remember when I met Bolton. Was I with you? We were at that, and I met him. I said, look, you've got to be the next. It was during the campaign still. And I said, you know, I'm putting your name in for Secretary of State. I winked at him. He was a nice guy. Apparently, my input with the Trump people didn't go very far. So there we have it. Now, You're probably wondering if what Trump did, if what Trump said, if how it was delivered, if the whole package de la Trump was so offensive, so horrible, so amateurish, so stupid, then what would the alternative have been had Hillary Clinton, in fact, sealed the deal back in November and were president of the United States today? Well, I have audio of her talking about this. And this is her on, what is she on, Colbert? Of course. Now she's pimping her new book. So this woman and her insufferable voice are all over everywhere. I cannot hide from her. But in this case, it's good because it gives us a glimpse into what would Hillary do. Listen closely.
What I'd hope the president would have said was something along the lines of, you know, we view this as dangerous to our allies, to the region, and even to our country. We call on all nations to work with us to try to end the threat posed by Kim Jong-un. And not call him Rocket Man, the old Elton John song, but to say it clearly, we will not tolerate any attacks on our friends or ourselves.
Is she a eunuch? I'm actually asking the question seriously, because listen, Trump took a flamethrower. I get it. But this is milk and cookies. This is milk and cookies. And we've been dealing with this nonsense for years. Wait, she says that we shouldn't call him Rocket Man. Okay. And then says clearly, we will not tolerate any attacks on our friends or ourselves. That's what Hillary would have done. What? I mean, you really think, I'm asking this, seriously. You're Kim Jong-un. You kill your own brother in an airport using a highly toxic sarin nerve agent gas. You obliterate your enemies using mortar rounds. And you're going to have Hillary Clinton standing there saying, we will not tolerate any attacks on our friends or ourselves. Yeah, right. Baloney. Okay, don't go anywhere. Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation, back live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. You know, listening to Hillary explain what she would have said, were she president and speaking at the UN, delivering sharp criticism of Kim Jong-un and his rogue regime, I would have said something along the lines of, we will not tolerate any attacks on our friends or ourselves. We view this as dangerous to our allies, to the region, to our country, blah, 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 blah. I mean, this is exactly the kind of weak, mealy-mouthed nonsense that got us into this predicament to begin with. She then goes on, you know, and this part I didn't play in the clip, but she talks about we need to try diplomacy. And everybody, all of Colbert's stupid audience members are all, oh, yes, clapping and clapping. And you dolts, where have you been? I get it if you are accepting that where we are today, here and now, has occurred in a vacuum. That's fine. But it hasn't. You know, I'm reminded of President Clinton, the Clinton that actually did become president, succeeded at winning a few elections. Bill Clinton, that's right. Back in, what is this, October 2000. This is right before the election. So this would have been at the end of the Clinton presidency. This is New York Times, did a gushing piece about Madeleine Albright, who is Czech, by the way, a little Czech granny, a little Czech babichka is what they call them there. Anyway, Madeleine Albright sends her over to North Korea, and she has a lovely, lovely tete-a-tete with Mr. Kim, as the New York Times calls him. Mr. Kim. It's a guy who literally nukes, I mean, just obliterates his enemies, cuts them up in little pieces, runs concentration camps in the here and now. Mr. Kim, in a day of surprising high-stakes diplomacy, Mr. Kim and Dr. Albright spent more than 6 hours together discussing strategic differences that divide the two countries, but also impressing each other with warm gestures and words. This is what the left cares about. No substance, no reality, just feelings. Because when you read this article from the New York Times back in October of 2000, all this is about what feels good. What feels good? Oh, there were nice gestures and nice words. And do you know why this is comforting to libs? Because libs are non-confrontational, you know what? They want to feel good that there isn't a conflict, and so they deny a conflict exists. They don't want to know about it. It's not there. I mean, they run around forever chasing their tails about global warming and that kind of nonsense, but a dictator out there with nukes that wants to blow us up in smithereens, no, that's not happening. It's not real. We're going to will it out of sight, out of mind. And then Trump is the guy who's the aggressor by daring to challenge such a despot. So what I think, very simply, is it comes down to the old time-tested adage of peace through strength. If you want peace, you've got to show your enemies that you are willing to obliterate them. They're much less likely, the bullies, much less likely to come at you when they know and they believe you, most importantly, they believe that you will fight back and that you will kill them. The world is a safer place with a strong and decisive America. When this country is decisive, when this country is strong, the world is safe. And that was the real problem, I think, of 8 years in Obama running around apologizing and being weak and projecting his, you know, just sophomoric kind of leftist Harvard attitude around the world. And what of it? The world literally went to hell in a handbasket. All right, we're going to be back tomorrow night at 7 with more exciting stuff. Come back.